We're back. Taylor Report, CIT, 89.5 FM. Again, Global Research Today has published an article by myself, actually, but it's basically a compilation of some of the most relevant remarks made by Amadou Dem, who served at UNAMIR in Rwanda in 1994, and today is April the 6th, and that's how we are marking that date. And I believe now we're joined by the publisher of Baraka Books, Robin Philpott. Are you there, Robin?
Yes, I am, Phil.
Hey, thank you very much for being available. It's a busy day. Now, we're happy to announce that you're somebody close to you, John Philpott, the lawyer who represented clients before the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. He edited a book, Justice Belied, The Unbalanced Scales of International Criminal Justice,
right,
together with Sebastian Chartrand.
Yeah.
Now, John is going to be coming here Friday on the 10th at 7 o'clock, Bets Attuned, 612 Markham. I hope really everybody will come out for that.
Right.
Tell us about your view of this book and its what's in it and what's the reception been.
Well, the reception has been very good. We've had some good reviews. We've had, and I think that it's a book that really comes at an important moment in history. We've had 20 years of what they call justice, international criminal justice, and this book points out the failures from the beginning, and the contributors are extremely varied. You know, you do have academics, but you also mainly have practicing lawyers, investigators, people who really had to deal with this what they called justice, and they point out that it is the creation of impunity for certain players. As an article that you wrote entitled was called "It's War by Other Means," the questions that the book raises are so important these days, like the refusal to recognize national sovereignty, the idea that superpowers can give themselves the right to invade or to apply a justice to a country on internal judicial matters. With a sort of this creation of international criminal justice, and they can basically intimidate governments, people throughout the world,
yes,
by using this justice. In other words, through the justice system, you have this violation of national sovereignty, and then you also have people doing it openly, like Canada just 2 weeks ago voted to violate the national sovereignty of Syria. And so this book brings us back to the fundamentals of what constitutes peace and how peace can be obtained, and how peace was obtained after the Second World War. The foundations of our current, what was aimed to be a peace that would end all wars after 1945, just being ignored, thrown aside in all kinds of different manners. So.
Yeah. Well, it definitely, I mean, that, you know, this, it was supposed to be, it's rather like it's our understanding of justice wherever we might live, which is equality before the law.
Yeah.
And one state is equal to another state. There's not a super state that says, you know, your laws don't work. We're going to do what we want, which is called colonialism.
Right.
And the UN Security Council was dedicated to ending that system, but it seemed to come back. By the way, I noticed how you must have seen that Mr. Saunders of the Globe and Mail wrote a meditative piece in which he discussed his recent conversations with Louise Arbour, who was there for the big founding of the Yugoslav and Rwandan tribunals, in which she indicated she's rethinking this herself.
Yeah, well, it's too late, too little, and too late, and for Louise, I think. And Louise's picture's on the front of this book, by the way, with Madeleine Albright. Yeah.
I don't think Madeleine's changed her opinion.
No, I don't think so either. But Louise is probably just sort of like a jockeying for position and heritage or legacy. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, her legacy is one of violating international law and being the spearhead of violations of international law, indicting President Milosevic of Serbia, the way she operated as prosecutor in the Rwandan tribunal, breaking all laws and then saying, well, it is Africa, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, she said things like this, you know, we have to do things differently because it's Africa.
Well, I do recall, yes, that the proposition was that they were ending a culture of impunity, though they never demonstrated that that culture of impunity existed. Had they gone to Washington, D.C., they might have found the culture of impunity.
Exactly.
Rather proud to shake their hands and say, by the way, we don't even believe in international courts. We never put an American in front of one, but we will go to Africa and help you arrest
But everybody it. Else, every yes. other country, especially yes. in Africa, and that's why it's unbalanced scales, it's yeah. unbalanced towards
unbalanced
Africa.
Scales, good title. This is, we're speaking to Robin Philpott. John Philpott will be speaking here Friday the 10th at 7 p.m. at Beit Zetun at 612 Markham. One last point on that. Our listeners should know that John Philpott, when the tribunal was being established, he wrote an article that was widely read in Africa. Certainly, I know in Kenya that mm-hmm. the major newspaper of Kenya republished an article which was basically a lawyer's article about international law, ordinarily read by other lawyers. But the government mm-hmm. of Kenya wanted Kenyans to know that John was pointing out that this court really should not be established if it's going to violate the sovereignty of African countries or any country.
Right, and also the point that made in that thing is that it was not normal that the Security Council create an international justice entity, whereas the Security Council is responsible for coercion. And mm-hmm. it should be only the General Assembly that should be allowed to create such entities or instruments as an international criminal court. Mm-hmm. In other words, when it's done by the Security Council, it's a case of its coercion. I mean, in our situation, you don't ask that you have a clear separation between the legislative, the executive, and the judicial branches. But no, and with that, it was the people responsible for coercion decide that they're going to create this tribunal.
Yes.
So
yes.
you know what they're trying to do is impose on others.
Well, and it ended up, I mean, hypocritical this unfolded hypocritically. The president of Kenya he voiced concerns about where they were going with the tribunal, and they assured him that he had nothing to worry about, and that everything, the I's would be dotted and the T's crossed. However, then 20 years goes by, and the president of Kenya finds himself, not the same one, but another Kenyan president, finds himself being accused and being brought in front of an international tribunal at The Hague, and
right.
he had to go his country had to go through 3 years of agony before they said, no, forget it, the whole thing is over.
Exactly.
I mean, that points up, I think the John Philpott's article the original one ought to be brought forward now and say, if you were teaching a course on this, say, read this article and see what happened.
Right, exactly.
Robin, I don't want to miss the chance to ask you, as you know, we are in English Canada, so you are located somewhere, we think, east of Albania in Quebec.
Right.
And apparently there have been demonstrations upward to 100,000 students going on in the streets. And by the way, the world media writes about it, and they call you Canada. They say big demonstration in Canada. The English Canada is not aware of this. Could you tell us, what is this about?
Well, Thursday there was a huge demonstration, and it was a demonstration called by the students and the unions. It was Thursday, April 2nd, and people are talking about 75,000 marchers. It was two to three kilometers long, 15 people wide, marching. It was largely students than it was trade unions, but the unions were out because their collective agreements expired the day before on April 1st. And the big fight is austerity, and
And by the way, also the teachers got involved, right? Didn't?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Was, I understood there was a shutdown by the university professors. They joined the students.
Exactly, exactly. And there were 135,000 students on strike on Thursday.
Wow.
So now the big debate, and there's a lot about these students. Are they going to keep going strike now, or will they put it off until the fall when the trade unions are right now? They're getting strike mandates in the unions, and so they're all fighting. It's a common cause on this austerity. And austerity, although they didn't go after tuition fees this year as they did 3 years ago in 2012, they are hitting all kinds of areas in education. And so the students are very much mobilized. People are trying to trivialize this mobilization, but when you have 135,000 students on strike,
if we had 10,000 in Toronto, it would be a huge picture and long story followed by opinion pieces for 3 or 4
sure.
weeks if we got 10,000.
Yeah. What they're trying to do in a way to trivialize this is they're trying to compare it to 2012. This is different. There is a much stronger, I would say, unity between unions and students than there was in 2012. Now, whether it will blossom, to use this metaphor of spring, it remains to be seen, but the fight will go on into the fall. There is absolutely no doubt about it, because this government is trying to basically destroy what Quebec built since the 60s.
Yeah. And there's another reason. You have a popular democratic culture in Quebec that is unequaled in North America.
I think
you find it in the hemisphere, but not in North America.
One thing that's important is that this year, the repression and repression by the police in Montreal, Quebec City, and mainly, is excessive. And it's almost like they decided we're not going to, because it did get out of hand in 2012 for them. It got out of hand, and they tried to pass a law.
Brought down the government.
But now and that's one of the reasons why people are getting even more mobilized is because of the repression. You know, students being
it's a case of national pride. Robin Philpott, we appreciate it very much. The book is Justice Belied, and John Philpott will be in Toronto at Betsitude, 612 Markham, Friday, the 10th. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for calling, Phil.
Okay, doke.
Bye bye.
And Phil, we have an important announcement.
Well, yes, I want to mention Mumia Abu-Jamal, who
Please
was
right
extremely ill and was taken to emergency medical care, where it appears to be that he's had a severe case of diabetes, which has not been previously diagnosed. He was only in hospital for 2 days. He's been taken back to the prison, and his supporters and families are very concerned that he's not getting proper medical care. So they are asking you to use the telephone to call up John Wetzel, who is the secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, and his number is 717-728-4109. And they're asking for two things: that Mumia's immediate family can visit him more than one person a week, and that he can receive outside medical care of his own choosing.
Well, thank you very much. You're listening to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Please help with the new sound of your city fundraising drive. I'll just finish that story. Abraham Lincoln entered the captured city, and that was April the 4th, 1865, on March 31st, they held their last auction of slaves in Richmond. To the last days of the slaveocracy, they were still selling slaves in Richmond. They stopped selling them after the 31st and tried to move the slaves, but, of course, the slaves were freed. So, anyway, you've been listening to the Taylor Report, and you write to us, taylor@cit.fm. Mark, thank you very much. Phil Connett, thank you very much. I'm Phil Taylor. See you next week.